Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 18th of November. American Promise is a brand new documentary that is opening in major cities last week and this week all over the country. It's such an ambitious project. The documentary filmmakers spent 13 years going to school with their son and also with a very good friend of their son, documenting what it's like for two African-American males to be going to the Dalton School in New York City, which is considered one of the most prestigious private schools in the country. The reason for going there: to be in touch with all kinds of people, to establish a fine academic record. It's a fact that something like 31% of the graduates from Dalton go on to Ivy League schools. So this can be perhaps a high-pressure environment for young people. It's really a fascinating look at their lives year by year by year, reminding me, although they've done it in a more documented fashion, of that British series 7-Up. Did you ever see that, where they documented the lives of some British youngsters every 7 years? This one is every year, and now the students are off in college. Joining us to talk about American Promise is Michelle Stevenson, producer and director of the program, a graduate of McGill University and Columbia Law School. And she uses her background in critical studies, race, and human rights to inform her documentary work, which you have seen on PBS, Showtime, and many other outlets. And she's won a number of awards for her work. Michelle, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Joe Brewster is also here, also producer and director of American Promise. And he and Michelle did this together. They are married, and he has produced and directed award-winning feature documentaries. He's a Harvard and Stanford-educated psychiatrist who moved to New York City to pursue media studies in the service of social change. And together, they have produced two narrative films, three feature-length documentaries, while raising their two sons in Brooklyn. Joe, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm honored to be here.
Before we get into the substance of what you've done, what a record this is to have done this over a 13-year period of time. Isn't that something, Michelle?
Yes, it's kind of mind-boggling when I look back at it, you know. While we're in the process, you know, when you're in the thick of it, you're just kind of plugging away and not thinking too much about the final outcome, but really, you know, trying to be in the moment and trying to get, you know, the best material that we can. Mind you, you know, we have about 800 hours of footage that's been accumulated over the years of material that we use to cut the film. But when you boil it down to over the 13 years, it's actually a little under 5 hours a month on average that was shot. So the impression of that, it was very intense and the camera was on 24/7, but the reality is that it was actually quite sparsely shot over the years.
The other thing was that the camera was not only on the students and on your son and his friend, but it was also on you, which I found admirable, that you put yourselves there so that it's part of a whole package, because obviously parents are involved in their children's education as well.
Yeah, we started off thinking that we were going to focus primarily on interviews of the boys, and actually there were three girls involved also. Hmm. But over the next few years, one by one, the girls dropped out of the project but remained in the school. And we began to rethink the project, and we were really fascinated by the work of Steve James from Chicago, and the observational point of view. So we reassessed our shooting style, and we realized that we were part of the story, a major part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so we included ourselves, and we thank those girls who left the project so that we could expand it in this other way.
Let's describe Dalton, because here we are in the Midwest. I'm not sure how many people know about this school. It's a very prestigious school in New York. Who goes? Why do they go there? Michelle?
The Dalton School is located in one of the wealthiest districts in the country. which is the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and caters for the most part to that community. It's a rigorous academic college preparatory school, predominantly white and predominantly very wealthy. And as you mentioned earlier, the school is, I wouldn't say necessarily a feeder school, but the majority of the students end up in one of the top 100 schools in the country, colleges in the country, of which a significant proportion are Ivy League. So, you know, in terms of opportunity and access, you get a stellar education. However, Dalton is a private independent school. It's very expensive. There are many of the sort of these types of school in New York City, but there are others also in other urban areas across the country, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, Chicago,
Milwaukee,
San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Atlanta. And all of these, interestingly enough, you know, these schools really shape the leaders of our country in all facets of society, whether it's the sciences, the arts, politics. They are significantly represented in these areas. And I think for us, it looked like an opportunity we couldn't turn down. One, for the most part, they are very homogeneous. Dalton was very homogeneous until, until around the time we started to get we were asked to participate.
Mm-hmm.
The school had hired a new admissions director to work on creating a more diverse environment in the school that would better reflect the larger New York City area, but also that would prepare students for a global, you know, multicultural society, both nationwide but also internationally. So she was hired with that mission in mind, and we were then, you know, recruited, or our son was recruited, to be part of that initiative to starting from kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. So the goal was, and I wonder if they met that goal, 25% minority students?
That goal, I think, wasn't really reached until later in middle school and into high school.
Mm-hmm.
It remained quite homogeneous when we went through the lower school years and into the middle school years, when the boys were starting to have a more difficult time around not just academics but their social and emotional health. Ultimately, the numbers did increase, but I think they increased a little too late for our liking.
Mm-hmm.
So there are reports that the kindergarten class of 90 is 60%, not 16% African Americans, and 15% minority representatives.
The other thing that the film does is that it so captures, and this is because of your diligence, I'm sure, what it's like. It made me want to be in elementary school, you know, the early years of elementary school forever, because it so looks at what the difficulties are once you reach middle school and once you reach high school and preparing for college. There's kind of a freedom and an acceptance and a beauty about those early years, and then it gets tougher, doesn't it?
Yep, absolutely. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I guess it's universally accepted that at middle school, those ages around 10, 11, 12, and 13 are the most difficult times for a number of reasons. Our bodies are changing, hormonal changes, and relationships become very important, not only having them, but learning how to maintain them.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, being in a diverse environment was very important, because we would insulate our son from the impact of what's known as implicit bias. Implicit bias are unconscious projections and feelings and attitudes that people might have about you. These are split-second reactions, often having to do with race, class, or culture. And by having a diverse population, we thought we could inhibit or or limit the negative perceptions that they might have about our son.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that to be a big challenge, particularly in middle school.
It wasn't the case, was it, that there were attitudes that people had, that administrators at this very, very prestigious school had of your son and other minority students, particularly male African-American students, that were preconceived, that weren't based in reality? Is that fair to say?
Well, let me dial back a bit when we talk about implicit bias. Implicit bias is universal. These attitudes that people carry, in particular with regard to African-American men, but all of us, are shared. They're shared because there's a common media which begins to bombard us from the moment we pop from the womb. Attitudes about what we're able to achieve or not. Able to achieve, how we can jump, how high we can jump, whether we can do math or write on a high level. So we understood that existed, but one thing your audience should know, that the impact of implicit bias is probably most readily felt when kids are 3 and 4 and 5 years old.
Hmm.
African-American boys are expelled from preschool more than they're expelled from high school.
Are they really? I didn't know that.
And we had seen evidence of that. You mean as early as 4, my son came home and he said 4 and a half. Actually, he started the school at 5. So right a month after he entered the school, he came home and he says, you know, they keep asking me, am I rich? Am I poor? Am I rich? Am I poor? I keep telling him I'm in the middle, but they keep asking me.
Mm-hmm.
So we understand retrospectively, and maybe to some extent at that point, he was wrestling with who he was and who they were, what their expectations of
mm-hmm.
him were.
And what were your expectations, Michelle? Why did you want your son to go there?
Well, I was the late recruiter to this process of sending my son to this elite college preparatory school. I wanted to see if I could make the public school work for my son.
Mm-hmm.
I was politically invested in trying to find a fit that would work in a public school environment that could hopefully allow the same type of opportunity. I myself had gone to public school, but was a minority amongst a majority of white children and had a very difficult time in terms of finding my space and adjusting social and emotionally. So I kind of knew what that environment, not what the rigor of the environment was, because it was a public school, but I was in a rural area, but what it meant to be kind of a minority of color that needed to find a space. So I came to it reluctantly, but as I was looking for the public school that could work for my son in New York City back in 1999, I realized and noticed that the public school system here was as much, if not more, segregated in terms of opportunity for our children.
Mm-hmm.
My gifted and talented programs that were within schools, that were systems within schools, were segregated within those schools. I could not find children that looked like my son in those environments. And ultimately, you know, some of the educational access he would have or attention was not up to par up to what I wanted or thought he would be capable of obtaining. And so when I visited the Dalton School with its mission and its very kind of individualized attention that it was touting, I realized, and knowing, you know, the type of access and opportunity he would have at the end of this journey, whether it's to an elite college or a college that could provide, again, more opportunity for him, but also allow him to become a critical thinker that could, you know, that would be something that no one could take away from him after this process. And I said, I really can't turn this up. And so that's what motivated me to keep him there. And I have to say, when I visited the school and saw how rich the experience was, I said, how can I not let him experience this?
Mm-hmm.
But let's be something clear, because when
sure.
Michelle spoke earlier about the rigor, I want your audience to know that, that these schools are 2 to 3 standard deviations above above an average high school experience. Where I'm from in Los Angeles, the average high school graduate graduated back in the day on a 6th grade reading and writing level.
Mm-hmm.
This is college level work.
Mm-hmm.
In the 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, where the board scores are higher in the lower third than they are for most Milwaukee public schools.
Mm-hmm.
So the level of intensity is great. The level of skill development is very high. We were focused on whether our son could compete there, and whether we could provide the emotional support that he need in order to compete in that environment.
Was part of the reason you wanted this, let's start with you, Michelle, because you're very open about your own life at one point in the film. Your mom was having emotional problems, your dad was having financial problems, and we wonder this about our kids. I wonder this about my kids, too, that I loved going to school and I worked really hard, and you sound like you did that as well. And when your son was having problems, devoting himself to his schoolwork, it was sort of an anathema to you because that you did quite the opposite. Did you want for him what maybe you wanted as a child but couldn't have?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it was almost kind of, and this is something I think that many parents go through and ultimately have to come to terms with. It's the idea of living vicariously through him in terms of the kind of high school experience that I would have dreamt to have had but didn't, you know, was kind of at his reach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a learning and a teaching moment for us as parents to understand that there are things we have to let go, but not only that, that our experiences are different, the generations are different. And ultimately, while he may not understand the level of exposure that's going on for him in the moment, I have complete faith that, you know, as the years go by, he will be more appreciative and understand, or is understanding now actually in college, just what type of training and skills he's been handed, or that he's gotten and experienced through that type of academic exposure and intellectual stimulation. But all that said, there is that social and emotional toll that young African American boys face, and this is in whatever environment we're talking about, whether it's the rigors of a place like the Dalton School, where the African American boys are few and far between, or, you know, a majority African American public schools, where perception and bias still play a huge role in what is expected of them, whether they're perceived of as being prone to criminality or dangerous, and that we have to fight or we have to advocate for our children in all of these environments. So the trade-off, you know, is not the trade-off is a difficult process that all parents of African American boys have to face.
Mm-hmm. Joe, are you happy that Idris went to the Dalton School?
Well, happy is a big word. We are content with his progress, but with our contentment, we look in retrospect and we see the hard work that he had to put in, the pain. You know, the audience feels that when they come out of our screening.
Right.
And they'll probably ask the same question because we don't answer that question. But what I can tell you now is that my son is a proud African-American male. He's honest. He's empathic. He cares about the people around him. And he has the kind of critical thinking skills and academic skills that will serve him well.
And I also think that there's something else that goes on. There's a level of resiliency that, both the families and the children go to that ends up, you know, being an asset for them in future, in their future, for the boys' future, and whatever path they end up paving for them. In the case of Idris, you know, having gone to Dalton and being exposed to that community, of whom, you know, a large number will become leaders later on. He's been exposed to a community and has been able to navigate those waters and will ultimately, as an adult, have a certain comfort level when encountering that type of environment. He's also, you know, through the work and effort that we've done, gotten to know his own, you know, a background, his own community or various communities that we belong to that have allowed him really to be not only exposed but have a level of comfort and that where he can navigate different communities and be able to understand them and respect them but also be able to engage in them.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're going to hear a couple little clips from the film. There was a point at which our guests decided that they would invite other black families' parents to come to their house to talk about problems that the African-American students may be experiencing, to find out if what they were experiencing was similar to what other parents were experiencing. We'll hear a little bit of that. And there's also a different educational experience going on with the other young gentleman who is featured in this film, who is at Dalton until high school and then goes to a predominantly African-American school, experiences a real tragedy in his family as well. I'm interested in how he is faring now and the comparisons that they saw between the two schools, what struck them about being most similar or most different, most advantageous, most troublesome for the students. The film is going to play at the Gene Siskel Film Center in downtown Chicago November 22nd through the 27th, with three showings on Saturday, November 23rd. And Joe Brewster and Michelle Stevenson, who are our guests, will be present for an audience discussion at all the Friday and Saturday showings and at the Sunday 2 p.m. showing. The film is going to premiere, mark this on your calendar if you've got one for next year yet, on February 3rd, 2014. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join this conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. In some ways, kind of an extension of what we were talking about last week when we were looking at schools in Wisconsin and the enormous gap in test scores, math and reading test scores, between African-American, particularly young males, and those who are not minorities, is the largest in the whole country. So are there problems in public schools that are similar to what is experienced in the Dalton School? Does it teach us these experiences and getting this kind of examination of a prestigious public, a private school? Are there things that can be learned for public education, or are some of the problems just universal and have to do with our perceptions of young black males in this society? What do you think? I know you haven't seen the film yet, but you will soon, but the issues are still in front of us. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we have some phone calls coming in, so we'll play a little clip of the film in a moment, but let's go to some of the calls. Our guests are Michelle Stevenson and Joe Brewster. They are the producer and director of American Promise. And as I said, this is a 13-year exploration of their son, Idris, at the private, prestigious Dalton School in New York City. And Shan, his good friend, he goes a different route when it comes to high school. And it looks at what they encounter in this school and in life over that long period of time. Let's go to Brant in Jefferson, our first caller. Hi, Brant.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Brant.
I think Joe said that there are more African-American preschoolers that are expelled than high schoolers. And I was just wondering what kind of things are preschoolers being expelled for. And I'll just take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, Brand, thanks.
Generally, it's behavioral problems. And interesting enough, if you look at the expulsion statistics, they're quite subjective. And so what we find is that they're generally not violent first degree offenses, just minor behavioral problems, and there's also a gap in terms of white versus black being discipline and the length and the severity of discipline for the same offenses. And so if you want to look at those statistics, I don't know the exact reference, but you'll find them in our book, which is being published by Random House.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention the book. Is the book out yet?
No, the book comes out January 14th, but you can pre-order it on Amazon.com. It's called Promises Kept. And we really culled research from over 55 experts on issues of black male achievement, ranging from, you know, prenatal care all the way to graduation from high school and preparing for college. And it deals with a gamut of issues, some that are actually applicable to all students in terms of what can best benefit a child, you know, being socially and emotionally healthy while also, you know, being academically successful, to very particular issues related to African-American males and how perception has an impact on their performance, mm-hmm. whether it's, again, this issue of implicit bias, where the best of intentions of teachers and adults who surround them can often have very strong negative consequences on the sense of self of the child, but also in their ability to perform academically, to the issues of stereotype threat. This is the expert Claude Steele at Stanford who coined the term that has to deal with what are some of the anxiety-provoking perceptions of stereotype that we internalize that actually affect how we perform academically. Mm-hmm. And with regards to African-American males, it really has to do with the self-doubt that becomes internalized around our ability to perform just by, you know, crossing, you know, the racial identity at the front of standardized tests. So there's a full load of information there and solutions that we think parents can be armed with in terms of advocating for their child around their social and emotional well-being, as well as, you know, day-to-day practices that we can instill with our children that can help their academic success, whether it's summer learning. There's a chapter that deals with those issues around summer learning that needs to happen in order to stay on track, because we know that the gap widens with every year, because not all students have the opportunity to continue a certain level of studying through the summer, and then they start, you know, the school year behind as every year goes by.
Here's a meeting, and I want you to comment on what we hear. This is a group of African American parents who met at Michelle and Joe's house to see if other parents were having similar kinds of concerns about their sons particularly. And let's take a listen, and then we'll talk about what we hear here. This is from the documentary American Promise.
What the white parents have shared with me is all of them were complaining about the same thing. He lost his book twice, and I don't know what's wrong with him. I can't get him to focus, and he comes home and he won't do his homework, you know, and then he forgets things, and he tells me at the last minute I'm up to midnight and I'm helping him do his work, and same exact thing that we're all going through. That doesn't take away from the fact that we have this extra burden in this country. It's just what it is. And I think as parents of a black male, you're going to worry, and you're going to have anxiety.
Let me tell you this. My son came into this school as an excellent math student. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching him going down, and I'm questioning what's happening. He's not going to be dealt with the same way like a white child is going to be dealt with. I hate to say it.
As parents of a black male, you know the struggle that they're going to have to face in reality of the way that people look at them and fear them.
That's
when
right.
They see them.
Right.
And so, because every day you're inundated with this marketing that a dark black face is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Watch out.
Joe, what is the extra burden that young African American males have to carry?
Well, I think Raul
expressed himself quite well in that last clip. What he speaks to is the perceptions that we are not capable academically, the perceptions that we may be angry, the perceptions that we are not interested in academics. Now, where does this come from? And a lot of people are unwilling to talk about these perceptions, but they are ubiquitous. You know, they did a study as recently as 2010, Schott Foundation, and they looked at media images of African American males in Pittsburgh. And what they found is that 85% of those news images were images related to criminality. And so when you are being bombarded like that with who you are and what you can be, it's really hard to think about yourself as an astronaut or a great student. And so and what the research says is if you want to do that, you have to constantly fight the battle of giving back those projections. And that's done with role models. That's done with teachers with high expectations. That's done with a community around you that is constantly confronting those unconscious projections. This is not the racism of before, the image of a racist person with, you know, blood dripping from their teeth and a noose in their hand. These are well-meaning people who are also impacted by these ubiquitous projections. And so, and in fact, I didn't even recount the projections of low expectations. And so in order to change this, we have to create a community that's able to talk about this. You know, when we began to have issues with Idris and Cheyenne, we sought out the attention consult of other African-American families. And what we discovered, it was so painful that they would not share with us. So those families ultimately, one by one, were asked to leave that institution. But the new families that replaced them, they were eager to talk. They were eager to share. And those boys began to thrive. That is the context of that clip that you show.
Mm-hmm. But I also just want to add a couple of things there in terms of the burden is that we as parents, as we raise African-American males, that extra burden is not only about providing a positive, you know, historical narrative, family narrative to our son so that he can maintain a central core and feel validated in whatever environment he finds himself in. But at the same time as we have to provide that positive narrative, we also have to prepare them for the perception and the confrontations or, you know, the projections and microaggressions that happen when they walk out the sanctity of their home and they walk the streets. You know, Idris in particular, you know, whether it's a taxi cab that he can't hail or whether it's a woman in the Dalton community in the area who runs from him because she thinks he's going to steal her purse when he's just going down the street to the gym to make it to his basketball practice, or that he's stopped by police, you know, two blocks from my house because he's coming home early from school. So those are things that we as parents have that additional burden. We have to prepare them for how they are going to deal with those situations while also making them understand that the opportunities for them are still open. They're still wide open.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what we have to navigate and balance, and it's difficult.
Did you ever feel, both of you, because some will, and there was a measure of this as I looked at all of the work that both of you were putting into homework and to your at every game, basketball game, and really devoting so much attention to Idris's well-being and to his education. Did you ever think that maybe you were doing too much? Did you ever feel that the expectations might be too high, that your involvement might be too much, that this kind of educational experience might be too much for people, young people?
You know, that's a very interesting question. But but I reject that outright, and because we were able to get through it. And I'm not saying that environment is for everyone, but let's look at where our leaders send their kids. Well, let's look at where our civil rights leaders send their kids. Our president sends his kids. They are looking for the most rigorous, emotionally supportive environment they can find. And we attempted to find that in the public school system. And we had additional obstacle of not being connected enough to get the variance to go to the school that where we'd have that opportunity. The reality is that education is like sex. Everyone thinks they know how to do it, but in reality, we have misperceptions about how to accomplish this. It takes hard work. It takes a commitment to that hard work and a lot of hours. And we were willing to commit to that. Again, it's not for everyone.
But also,
it should be something that we all have a right to. We should not have schools which graduate our kids at the sixth grade level, which abandon our kids en masse, but which don't provide them with the structural resources that are and the emotional resources that are required. And so, instead of I'm very clear about this, instead of looking at what we did to make our son come up to a standard, which is a good standard, let's look at what our cities are not doing to provide our sons collectively. The gap in Milwaukee is 30 points. That's
I know, it's terrible.
Statistic.
It's terrible.
And in Miami, the graduation in the surrounding areas of Miami, the graduation rate is closer to 25%. And we can go around the country and we can look at the statistics.
We can basically say that, you know, our societal issue is not one of pushing the students too hard. It's one really of not pushing them enough or not giving them the proper, you know, intellectual stimulation for them to want to stay engaged in school. In China, there are more honor students who graduate from high school than there are students in the United States. So if we're looking at competing on a global level, there are things that have to change. Now, the question is, did we have doubts? We had doubts all the time. I mean, I don't think you can be a parent and not doubt, at one point what you're doing, if what you're doing is the right thing. The question is, in the long run, what kind of balanced approach are you providing? The pushing, is it also being balanced with some kind of social and emotional nurturance? And if that's the case, then I think the sky's the limit for these boys.
Mm-hmm. We haven't spent very much time talking about Shan, whose experience was a little different. He went to a predominantly African-American minority school when he was in high school. Let me ask how he's doing now, because he experienced a horrible tragedy in his home during the making of this film, which understandably made him disinterested in just about everything. What struck you about his going to a very different educational environment, or maybe there were some things that were similar about that environment?
Sure, there are some similarities and the reverse. He had a number of obstacles, life obstacles, death, serious illness in the family. When there's a shooting in a neighborhood, the collective IQ of that neighborhood drops 10 points. And so stress is a huge factor in your ability to focus, mm-hmm. and to learn. And so he had a number of major events in his life that he had to overcome. Prior to that, he struggled in the Dalton environment. And you know, I do not feel that Dalton was adequately prepared to support him. And I am hoping, since the number of African American and minority students has increased substantially, that they're better prepared to provide that kind of social emotional support that's required. More African American teachers and more culturally relevant curriculum, diversity training for its faculty and staff, and a reasonable understanding which is developed from the parents, of the parents and the students of what it's like to be, for us to be in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Shayon ended up going, you know, leaving the Dalton School for some of these reasons that Joe just mentioned. And the school that was chosen for him to go to was predominantly African-American public school that, while not as academically rigorous, did provide a level of social and emotional support that was a priority for him, that was much needed for him in order to be able, you know, to face his high school years. And these are choices that parents have to make every day in terms of what are the best environments for our children. And Benjamin Banneker Academy was able to provide that nurturing social and emotional support with culturally relevant curricula that, you know, allowed him to kind of validate his experience and gain a greater sense of self through the process of the 4 years he was there.
We have to pause for a moment. Michelle, I think you have to leave a little early. Is that, I don't want to hold you if you need to be on the road.
Yes, I have to
okay.
leave, but Joe can,
yes.
can finish up.
Thank
you,
Michelle. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Michelle Stevenson, one of the producers, directors. Joe will stay with us. American Promise is the documentary that we're talking about this hour. You will see it on PBS in February. It's being shown in various parts of the country. Chicago, Gene Siskel Film Center, on November 22nd through the 27th, for those of you in the area who would like to see it fairly soon. More phone calls momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now. Let's go to Elaine in Colfax. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I have a theory that black students set in very privileged schools end up like Obama, someone who goes out of his way to please and do the work for the rich class of people. They go to a fine and superior school and have great gifts, but somehow they end up feeling inferior to the children of wealth and privilege that they carry with them for a lifetime. I mean, this is just my own, you know, analysis. I don't know what you think, but I sometimes think they end up seeking social status, and their values get screwed up. They have tremendous opportunities, knowledge, and gifts, but they use them for, you know, rising in the class of this country and not really doing for others.
Thank you, Elaine, for your call. Joe, what do you think?
Well, I would say two things, then, Elaine. That is a theory, and I have heard it before. And my response, first response is, black students have a right to that outcome. It is not the outcome that we want for our son. And I challenge anyone to have a meaningful conversation with our son about race or politics or his desires, and they'll say that he's a critical thinker and he cares about other people. I also like Obama, but I like Bill de Blasio better.
Okay. Elaine, thank you very much for your call. Shayon's mom at one point in the film says that she sent him to Dalton because she wanted him to be comfortable around white folks and she wanted him to be a passionate, lifelong learner and to not have problems with his self-esteem. Did Dalton do that for him? Did Dalton do that for Idris?
Well, the quick answer is no. The better answer is it's complicated. Dalton did some things right, and Dalton does things right for some kids versus others, just like you'll find in the public school. But when I talk about education for my son, I'm talking about his sense of social responsibility, his moral development, his psychosocial development, as well as physical and intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to be a critical thinker about all sorts of things. And so I'm not just talking about one scale. Dalton provided an excellent environment to learn facts and to think critically. It struggled to provide my son with the social-emotional support that he needed, particularly in the early grades. But nearer to high school, when there was an influx of African-American boys and girls from other institutions, things got better.
Hmm.
We made a conscious effort to augment what he was getting there. He was a participant in sports programs outside of the Dalton Institution.
Mm-hmm.
He was a leader in an affinity group. It was a citywide affinity group for African Americans in independent and parochial school environments. They had their own leadership council, their own extracurricular activities. And he points to that as the single most important activity in his high school career. Dalton provided him with an African-American advisor, the only male instructor in the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was extremely important moment in his life, that three-year period. That role modeling was essential, even though he has a father.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a physician and a college graduate. I would remind your studio audience or your audience that adolescents and fathers are tough. It's tough for us because he needs to get away, to move away and develop his own identity. And he did that. And so I'm thankful for the role that Mr. Fisher played at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to your question, we did not expect Dalton to provide everything. And they recruited our son and said that they would provide him with additional support, social-emotional support, because at one point we made the decision to look elsewhere. And he made the decision to go back to Dalton.
Oh, interesting. Well, you're going to have, if you haven't already started with these very interesting discussions, are you going all over the country with the film, Joe, and having discussions with people?
Well, one thing we're doing, first of all, we're in another Midwest city on the 22nd, and I believe that's Minneapolis.
Oh, okay.
The exact theater, I do not know, but if they go to our website, which is AmericanPromise.org, they'll find those cities.
Okay.
And they may even find a public screening in
Great.
Milwaukee.
Oh, good, good.
So the thing is that we're traveling with the city, the film, for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're preparing for our national broadcast. So it will be in over 50 cities.
Mm-hmm.
We will visit about 15.
All right. Well, all the best to you. Thank you so much. It's a rare kind of documentary with so much time spent, so many years, and an important issue. Joe Brewster, producer and director of American Promise, his wife Michelle Stevenson, they are the parents of Idris, who is one of the African-American students who's featured prominently in this film. They also have a book coming out. This will be a PBS feature. And go to AmericanPromise.org to find out about screenings in this area and in the Midwest. Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Rhonda Fanning and Lisa Nabandian for producing this program. Until tomorrow.